A warning before we start. This episode includes strong language and discussions about suicide.
If I veered 2 feet to the right, we would go tumbling down a mountain. It's safe to say.
It is safe to say.
My producer Jessica and I are driving through a tropical forest in Costa Rica. We're on our way to Teal Swan's Retreat Center. It's called Philia. It's been 3 weeks since I first talked to Teal, the spiritual leader with a global online following. In that call, she said I could come out to her next event. It's called the Curveball Retreat, because it's supposed to disrupt the patterns of your life. At least that's what I find out from the website. I really have no idea what to expect. All I know is that 22 fans are also going to be there. They've traveled from all over to spend a week with Teal. It costs $5,000, or $4,200 if you're willing to share a room. And that doesn't include airfare. I'm going because I want to see Teal's operation up close. Because I know that some people go to these events and just stay in Teal's commune and become volunteers. I'm curious what kind of experiences they're having that makes them want to leave their lives behind and stay in Teal's world. But I also want to observe her therapy methods. Especially after learning about Leslie, one of Teal's clients who took her life after working with her for about a year. I want to know why and how Teal helped Leslie uncover memories of her birth father abusing her.
Would not want to get stranded out here.
So far, I've spent a lot of time researching Teal, watching her videos and talking to people about Leslie's death. And now I'm finally out in the field on a strange adventure driving to meet a spiritual guru on her private estate. The Philia Center is in a little village in the town of Atenas. I have to admit, I'm pretty nervous driving out here. Jessica and I are about to be in a secluded, gated retreat center, not only with Teal and her workshop participants, but also her intentional community. There's people like Rayo, the skateboarder we met in the first episode, and many other friends/roommates/volunteers who live and travel with Teal. We'll all be isolated at the center together.
We take a right? I would guess so.
I think that's it.
All right.
The entrance is right between this small Catholic church and a tiny butcher stand, complete with a mural of Homer Simpson eating a hamburger. That entrance leads to this narrow, unpaved road, not much wider than the car.
Oh, this is a treacherous road to get down to the main center.
We make it to the end of the road where there's this big door.
Big metal blue door.
I feel like it's like Jurassic Park.
Buenos dias.
Hi, this is Jennings, the reporter.
Hello.
The door splits open to reveal this beautiful tropical landscape. Palm trees and bright flowers everywhere, little statues of deities. It's surrounded by rolling hills. On the way in, I'm anxious, picturing Jim Jones scenarios. And if you think maybe I'm being paranoid, listen to Teal in one of her videos about false prophets.
Don't believe for a second that Jim Jones thought that he was causing people harm. He thought that he was helping people. He thought that the only way for them to be free was to die.
So I was a little spooked. But as we drive through the gate and the door shuts behind us, the place is calming. I'll spend a week at Philia, roaming the property, watching Teal lead participants through her therapy exercises, and getting to know some of her followers. Sometimes things seem pretty tranquil. Other times, not so much. For instance, when I interview Lynn Bush, she's one of Teal's devoted followers and she's engaged to Blake, Teal's longtime friend and business partner.
I'm not going to say we don't all have our triggers and issues, but the most wonderful part about her, and the thing that I'm learning most from her is...
What? Do you know what's going on over there?
Well, someone's just in a part.
Okay. Excellent.
That happens.
Yeah.
Playing painful parts.
What's happening over there from what you... I mean, you don't know specifically, but what's happening?
Let me, like, tune into it.
Okay.
Someone is playing the part of, like, deep despair. I can really feel it in my stomach, too. So obviously I don't know exactly what's going on, but... what exactly is happening in the channeling process to lead to a space like what's happening over there?
Okay, so everything is one energy. So we are basically all literally like created from the same exact energy. So if you're the same energy, you can be. See, this is triggering you. This is a good time for you to actually do a process.
Lynn was really interested in having me do Teal's signature method, the completion process, in which you're supposed to work through your childhood trauma. I wasn't ready to do it here, not out in the forest of Costa Rica. But I did end up doing it later. I'll tell you more about it in another episode. The people screaming in the background of this interview, they're actually playing out other people's family members and inner emotions. It's called channeling. It's a therapy method of Teal's that we'll explore at Philia. Teal says channeling is like being possessed, but intentionally. So that screaming that keeps punctuating the retreat,
I hate you! I hate you! I hate you! I hate you! I hate you!
That's possession.
I hate you.
A lot of therapy retreats involve some variation of role-playing. But with Teal, what starts off as the expected quickly becomes the unexpected, and weird, and dark. I'm Jennings Brown with Gizmodo, and this is The Gateway. Part 3, Philia. Channeling may be the main activity going on during this workshop, but it isn't the only one. Jessica and I got to Philia halfway through the retreat. The guests are already in the routine, people are already connected, they've established their friends and cliques. It feels like the third day of summer camp. When we get there, everyone is preparing for a group meditation. They're all gathering in this open-air bungalow. As we're waiting for Teal to arrive, I get a good look at everyone who's here. There are people in their early 20s, 30s, middle-aged, men and women. It's obvious these people are high on Teal. Later, I'd find out they come from very different walks of life. There's a game developer and a barista, a yoga instructor and a therapist, and surprisingly, to me at least, there's a surgeon.
My name is Ivana Jaletovic. I am a gastroenterologist and advanced endoscopist.
A surgeon who has trained and worked at some of the best hospitals in the country. The Mayo Clinic, Harvard, MD Anderson.
I'm Dr. D. Everybody calls me Dr. D.
What Dr. D and most people here do have in common is they all found Teal on YouTube. For her, it was the video, How to Heal the Emotional Body.
Today I'm going to talk to you about the feeling body. The feeling body is what most people call the emotional body. So you can use these two terms interchangeably. Your feeling body is the truth.
In the video, Teal explains that when we're sick, it's really just a manifestation of emotional issues, especially suppressed emotions. Dr. D connected to this message because she had started to question the medical establishment and the limits of what she learned in school. She was worried she wasn't doing everything she could to help her patients.
What I'm realizing now is that Western medicine only treats a limited aspect of a disease, which is the physical aspect, but it doesn't treat this other energy aspect of disease that actually does exist.
It took her 16 years to become a surgeon, but when she finally got there, she started to question the path she'd taken. And what do you do when you have questions? You search for an answer on the internet.
Like, I was sort of asking questions in my head, and then her video popped up. It was sort of like finding an answer that finally makes sense.
Now she's adding to her years of medical schooling with an education from Teal. She told me that one day she'd like to open a clinic to help educate other doctors about the aspects of disease they didn't learn about in school. This is the third workshop she's been to.
My primary work with her, in a sense, is to understand the subconscious mind and then figure out how that affects her physical health.
That's why she's in this circle with me, waiting for Teal. Suddenly, there's a flurry of excitement and everyone looks in my direction. I turn around as Teal Swan descends a stone staircase. She's followed closely by two women.
Good morning, everyone. How are you guys?
This is my first time seeing her in person. She's wearing this flowy, psychedelic floral print dress, and her eyes are even more piercing than in her videos. She takes a seat on a raised chair, front and center, regal and calm. And the two women sit on either side of her. She starts the day by taking a few questions and comments from the group.
Anything else come up yesterday?
For me, I'm manifesting some things somatically, right? And I was talking with one of the other participants about it, and I've got a lot of stuff going up on in my third chakra. But it's really made me aware. In fact, I was channeling someone's shoelaces. They were loose, right? I said, it has to do with your, yeah, it has to do with your path, and it doesn't want to be tied in a knot, right? Yep. So it's just hanging loose, because she said they keep coming undone. Yep. Yeah. So you can apply to anything.
And then after hearing from everyone who wants to speak, she gets things started.
You guys ready to do our little exercise for the day?
Yeah.
So what I want you to be doing for this little exercise, once he starts playing this, is I want you to imagine that you're dead. So we're all gonna get suicidal for a moment.
In my first phone conversation with Teal, she told me how she hates that people say she's promoting suicide. And people do say that, and I can see why. She does say a lot of controversial things about it. And now, in this workshop, she just said she wants everyone to imagine that they're dead. And this is concerning for me because studies show that exposure to suicidal behavior within a community can lead to an increased risk of suicidal behavior among people who are already feeling this way, especially among young people. It's called suicide contagion. But here we are, first exercise of the day. And she wants everyone to get suicidal?
Or some of us not suicidal, we just got in a freak accident or had an illness or whatever it is. Okay, so what we're gonna be doing, and it's almost like a meditation. So I want you to be looking at how you died and let this intuitively come to you. Then I want you to go further. I want you to watch your own funeral. I want you to watch the entire process around your death. I want you going through the whole damn process, make it very, very real. This is a safe space to get this dark, okay?
Everyone seems more than ready to go to a dark place for this. They're all sitting in their wicker chairs, attentive. As they close their eyes to meditate, I keep mine open to observe. Teal requested this specific song. I looked it up later. The group, Marconi Union, actually worked with sound therapists. The song is meant to reduce anxiety and increase relaxation. People are breathing deeply. Their palms are open. Teal is sitting perched higher than everyone else, just gazing out over everyone, stoic, observing her students. As they're all meditating, I'm just looking out onto a circle of grim melancholy. 22 people imagining their death. People are weeping. One of the volunteers starts passing out toilet paper to all the people who are crying. A British man sitting next to me, his whole body is shaking. I wonder what's going through everyone's head right now. As for Dr. D, she's imagining herself dying of old age.
I was in a big house, I was in a big library. The library overlooks the ocean, but I was alone in the room.
She didn't think about drowning or suicide, but she's completely alone at the end of her life. I see tears dripping down her face.
I actually experienced my own death. It wasn't thinking about it, it was actually living it, feeling it. And that made the world of difference. Versus me imagining it, I felt it as if it actually happened.
They meditate on their death for 15 minutes. By the end, most people look like they're in the middle of deep grieving. And then Teal tells everyone to come out of it, to open their eyes. Some people went to a really dark place. Like one woman died in a plane crash. She watched herself get burned up in a fire. Officials identified her based on the seat location that her charred corpse was in. But Dr. D had this sort of epiphany like Scrooge waking up on Christmas morning with a chance to live again. Her big takeaway is that she spent so much of her life working that she never slowed down to enjoy friends and experiences.
Okay, are we good, everyone?
Then Teal explains that the main point of this exercise is to figure out what people would do with a second chance at life.
Well, obviously, like I said, when I want you leaving here, I want you leaving in an attitude of I'm going to basically make a drastic change to my life. That just told you what change you need to make. Like, if you have lived a life that is genuinely satisfying, it's this energy of, like, I'm done now. That's what I want you to feel like when you actually die, which you're not ready for, so basically.
We're not going anywhere.
The death meditation was just the first step. Dr. D still needs to figure out what's holding her back from taking moments to enjoy life and recharge. What's the root trauma causing this issue? Teal believes that everyone has experienced trauma in their lives. And I'm realizing Teal's followers often find out the root trauma has to do with their parents. And this seems significant to me, because it can make it difficult to go back to your family once you think they caused you trauma or abused you.
No, like literally, that was her father.
Yeah.
Like that's why all of us were breaking down.
After the break, Dr. D confronts her dead father.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
These retreat activities are like a Russian doll set. With each one, you're opening up another part of your subconscious mind, discovering some new emotion or memory, and then opening another one, and another, until you get to that final doll, your deepest issue nestled beneath it all. The participants are about to get there through channeling. After the death meditation, Teal starts to explain the next exercise.
We're gonna break off into groups. Each person's gonna take a turn, and I literally don't care how long this takes, because this is really what you came here for, right? Is let's figure out what it is that's preventing the very thing that I'm wanting in life. And then we're gonna go into this, possession state, basically.
They all peel off into smaller groups for the big channeling exercise. Each group of participants has a facilitator who is trained by Teal. Some groups stay in the bungalow, others walk to the middle of the grassy knoll or find private nooks around the property. Then they start what looks like a role-playing exercise. It's like part therapy, part improv troupe. Teal pulls me aside and tells me more about what's going on.
So what's happening here is possession. Are you familiar with like people getting possessed, right? You're taking on that energy completely, forgetting yourself.
Within each of these groups, one person is the focus, while the others channel the people and issues that are associated with that person's trauma.
You can do it on anything you want. If you wanted to understand that rock right there, I could put somebody in the role of a rock. You can put someone in the role of a solution.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing you can't do this on.
Well, all right.
What you do, it's like, oh my, it's crazy.
She told me I have to try it for myself, but I witness enough to know I'm not ready to go there.
Mommy! I hate you. I love you, Mommy.
Not just because it's so jarring, but because a lot of people seem to be focusing on their family issues, discovering new things about their relationship with their parents. I see this when I sit in on Dr. D's channeling session. They're sitting in the back of the bungalow in a circle, They're trying to get to Dr. D's root issues, the Russian doll at the very core. During her death meditation, she had this realization about herself. She was raised in war-torn Bosnia, where her family taught her you have to be tough to survive. Her whole life was about work, and she never learned how to take a break and have fun. Teal asks another participant, Aaron, to channel the side of her that's stopping her from having fun.
Do you accept to play the aspect in her life that prevented her from having fun with reality?
Okay, yes.
Aaron is large and bald with a beard. He's worn a different graphic t-shirt with a cat on it every day of the retreat. Today's cat is an adorable monster destroying a city Godzilla style. He starts playing the aspect of Dr. D that doesn't have any fun. But that role eventually evolves into her dad because the group realizes that her father is really what's keeping her from having fun.
They're fine, he's a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And there's like, he looks at me, he's like...
Dr. D recalls a time growing up in Bosnia when she was almost in a car wreck with her dad because a herd of cows had blocked the road. Aaron, channeling her dad, clarifies that they only avoided the wreck because he was focused, not listening to the radio and having fun.
I was busy having fun by the radio or something.
There's like three times we could have died. There's like zero. And he like,
listen to what he just said.
What did he say?
What he just said is everything. I mean everything.
What did you say?
Well, I said if we'd been busy having fun, like listening to the radio, I'd been too distracted and I would have been that.
We would have died.
Yeah.
That's the real reason you can't have fun. That's what you adopted from your dad.
If I relax, I'll die.
Fun equals unsafe.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I feel like if I relax, somebody will like take the rug under me and I will die.
Well, your whole life is about hypervigilance.
Yeah.
You should write that down. Like, my whole life is about hypervigilance. A lapse in concentration for 30 seconds means someone's sick, someone's dying.
Yeah.
Dr. D looks stunned. They got to the root problem of why she can't enjoy life. Her father associated fun with danger. This whole process takes more than 2 hours. Eventually, Dr. D tells her dad to leave this planet and come back when he finds more compassion for her. Then Aaron goes through a shift. He becomes more sympathetic.
I love you and I'm always going to be here for you. And I am so, so sorry.
He rubs her shoulders lovingly and tells her he wants her to have more fun.
Thank you for being my dad.
You're welcome.
You like played it to the T. Like, yeah. You don't understand.
You actually were with your father.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. That was weird.
Fucking crazy.
He died in May.
Her dad died just a few months before the retreat. In this session, Teal explains, Aaron was actually truly possessed by Dr. D's father. Not just his essence, like actually him.
Like, no, like literally, that was her father.
Yeah.
Like literally,
wow.
Not figuratively.
Yeah,
like we were losing our shit because like,
no, but like, his face changed. The energy changed. Yeah. The face changed.
Like, that was literally your dad. It wasn't a figurative thing.
Yeah.
Everyone is wide-eyed like they've seen a ghost. The group believes they just saw a dead person possess someone here. They say they noticed a physical shift, but I didn't really see anything like that. I see two ways to look at this. Either possession is real, or if it's not, then potentially vulnerable people are letting relative strangers portray their family members while the person thinks this is how their parents and siblings would actually act. For the first time, I'm getting a sense of how Leslie, while working with Teal, came to believe she had uncovered memories of her father abusing her. Teal seems to be encouraging people to think of their past in radically different ways. I also can't help but wonder if Teal is engineering a mystical experience. It's something a lot of gurus do. And it's something she's been accused of. I saw a review on the Philia Facebook page urging people not to go. It read, "She preyed on my grief after losing my father to cancer by telling me she saw my dead father." Turns out this woman never even met Teal. She told me she emailed her about one of her books, and Teal responded with a long message saying she had met her dead father. The woman noticed it read like it was pulled straight from her father's obituary. We weren't able to verify this with Teal. But regardless of whether Erin was actually channeling Dr. D's dad, she said she did experience resolution.
It was emotional, but an incredible closure to our relationship. I honestly don't have words to explain that. I had a complete closure in a relationship between me and my father.
Teal told me early on that she wanted to focus on Dr. D.
I'm really interested in watching her processes and making it so that she can comprehend this, because it'll change her entire practice if she does.
Wow.
No more guessing games as a doctor.
Wow.
Like, let's say, like, she's a gastric surgeon, so she deals with the digestive system. Mm-hmm. So let's say that she's dealing with a patient. She can take another doctor or somebody randomly off the street, and she says, can you play, you know, the liver of so-and-so? Can you play the stomach of so-and-so? She can see how the organs are interacting and what's going on there to create the underlying issue. She's already started doing this in her work. Like, this is the next level for her by the time she goes.
If you missed that, she said she literally wants Dr. D to take people off the street to channel her patient's organs.
It seems it's just kind of wild bringing all of these different stories and cases together. Yeah. And just letting them sort of mingle and participate in each other's therapy.
Yes.
I mean, I have to say, it seems like kind of playing with fire almost.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not afraid of that. That's where you get the best stuff.
The next day, during the morning exercise, another participant said she was jealous of the attention Teal gave Dr. D. Teal explains to the woman the jealousy comes from the fact that her 5-year-old self never got the love it needed from her mother. This has basically become a trope in Teal's world. The Philia Center gift shop even sells $18 t-shirts that say, what's your mommy issue and what's your daddy issue? Take your pick. Both come with Teal Swan's logo at the bottom. The rest of the workshop is full of channeling, meditation, more screaming, and lots of vegan food. It all ended with a cacao ceremony. Cacao is the seed that chocolate comes from. Some shamans use it in spiritual rituals. Teal is making the cacao herself in a cauldron in the cabana where, I kid you not, bats are hanging above her head and a black cat is prowling around. The next morning, after the participants leave the retreat, the volunteers go back to their daily work, building a spiritual guru's empire using the tools of the internet. Many of these volunteers had attended other workshops in the past, and decided to then leave their previous lives behind and work for Teal. I stuck around to see what this spiritual startup is really like.
Gabby here is my programmer, so she's, you know, one of those crazy computer hacker type. It's amazing.
After the break, we'll meet some of these volunteers. Nearly everyone I spoke with at Philia could tell me the first Teal Swan video they saw on YouTube. A lot of them suggested it was some cosmic delivery, like Dr. D said.
Like, I was sort of asking questions in my head, and then I would get the answer on a YouTube video. And I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Well, Teal told me what's going on.
Most people were going through a fucking huge crisis, like, yeah. Gun to your head type of crisis.
Mm.
And then, you know, they typed in something like, how do I not kill myself? Right. And my videos popped up, and then they just...
She wants to get her message to people when they're desperate, in dire need. She has good SEO. It's all intentional.
I specifically try to go for tags and things like that get to capture that audience. Because mm-hmm. when you're in a desperate state, it's not sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
People, like, when they're in that state, they type in shit like, I just lost my mother, what the fuck do I do?
Right.
Literally, that will be the Google tagline. So, like, right. Even when we're doing videos, we'll add things like that so that if someone's suicidal or if somebody's just had a breakup or whatever, that's the video that comes up.
Teal was explicit. She uses tags that target people when they're having suicidal thoughts. Hearing this made me curious why YouTube suggested I watch a Teal video in the first place all those months ago. I look back in my YouTube history for the first Teal Swan video I ever watched. The video right before it was the theme song of MASH, the Korean War dark comedy. That song is called Suicide is Painless.
That suicide is painless. It brings on many changes. and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is...
Then YouTube suggested I watch a Teal Swan video. And, well, that's how this whole thing got started. The people at Philia watched a lot of her videos and eventually ended up here. The things I saw at Philia were pretty strange. At least they were strange to me. But everyone else was ready for it. They knew the language, and they weren't surprised when she wanted everyone to get suicidal for a moment. That's because they were primed. Teal has already been a part of their daily lives. They already had a relationship with her through the internet.
One of the major benefits of doing my career the way I've done on YouTube is that I'm going into people's homes.
She's in people's homes.
For like 3 years.
Right.
It's been me every day.
They're watching her videos every day.
And so I don't need to break them into it. They're already coming here in this attitude of like, I already have a relationship with Teal.
Right.
I already know that Teal's the one that's going to answer these questions. And so their readiness to be vulnerable is already there.
Right.
So like, I don't need to do the prep work.
Her YouTube videos influence the way her followers see the world. At Philia, I met the people who are making those videos, the ones who film and edit them and who run her website and social media accounts. They're mostly unpaid volunteers, many of whom quit their jobs to live and travel with her. I get to know some of these people better after the participants left. Some of them were doing normal spiritual commune things, you know, like permaculture and building a sweat lodge with a visiting shaman. But I find there are marketing and tech-savvy people here, too. On the day after the retreat ended, some of the followers trail Teal, taking photos and videos of her.
Can you touch your face up a little bit? Very nice. Love that.
After the photo shoot, some of the volunteers sit around and open up their laptops. They turn up the music and start editing pictures and putting them into promotional images for upcoming events. In the following days and weeks, I'd see these photos popping up on Teal's Instagram. Sometimes with a Teal Swan quote over the photo, like, following your joy is the north star of being in the flow. And I'd see video clips from the retreat, Teal on her high wicker chair with all her participants surrounding her as she shares her wisdom. These people who follow her around with cameras and edit Teal's photos and manage her online presence, they all have different roles.
Gabby here is my programmer. She's in charge of IT.
In the black and pink.
Yeah, she used to work for the government of Lithuania or Denmark, one of those two. So she's, you know, one of those crazy computer hacker type. It's amazing. So,
my name is Gabby Atunlaitita.
Gabby is one of Teal's top tech people. She's Lithuanian, tall and blonde, and she has a tattoo on her left forearm.
That is a trident. This is something that Teal drew for me. It was a little spontaneous tattoo. I've been asking for it for many months, and she did it.
Wow. A lot of followers have Teal Swan tattoos. Teal told me she knows about 40 people who have them. But I've seen more than 40 social media posts from people showing off their Teal tattoos, so I imagine there are a lot more than that. Most of them get the symbol that Teal has on her left bicep. It's a circle inside a square, inside a triangle, inside a circle. She says it's become a symbol of the Teal tribe. Some followers get Teal Swan quotes, and some get her original designs. Gabia has been working and traveling with Teal for 2 years now. Her story is similar to many others. She came across one of her videos, fell down a rabbit hole, went to a workshop in Paris, and found out Teal was looking for a computer programmer.
I was having quite a hard time at my last job. I worked as a programmer for several years in Denmark before coming here.
She was working for a communication software company in Denmark. It builds systems for militaries. I'm sure it wasn't as exciting as traveling the world and building a spirituality brand.
Most of what you see online is past my hands, basically. Yeah. And then I do this, of course, which is walk around and support people emotionally and be Teal's assistant. But for my actual job, yeah, my job with Teal Swan is to be her programmer, her IT person. This is an opportunity of a lifetime for me.
I've spent a lot of time on the website, and it's slick. It has blogs and videos. You can pay extra for premium content. And to download high-res versions of Teal's frequency paintings that are supposed to heal you by changing the frequency around you. But I didn't think the programmer of all that would be one of Teal's followers. Gabia and the other members of the commune, they have multiple roles. One is their job behind the scenes, building the business, the website, the marketing, organizing the workshops. But many also facilitate the therapy of participants and followers within the community. They're constantly stopping to do different processes that Teal has created or is testing out.
You end up with a team that's like so fucking enlightened to the bullshit because they're doing this with each other all day long and doing it with these groups all day long. And each one of them they know pertains to them.
Yeah.
So it's like awakening, 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 awakening.
Teal's intentional community is really dedicated to their work and their awakening, and there's really not a clear distinction between the two. I witnessed this firsthand on the second morning after the retreat ended. Everyone was standing around in the main lodge at the top of the estate, waiting for Teal to come down for breakfast. Nobody would eat until she arrived. Finally, 2 hours later, she appears with her husband at the time, Alay. Teal and Alay explained to the group that they had done one of Teal's exercises together to work out relationship issues they were having. Alay had hurt Teal because instead of being close to her during the retreat, he spent the entire week building the sweat lodge. This process helped them realize Alay feels like an outsider in the community.
In the community, basically, we've got an issue with people feeling connected to Alay. Right?
Okay. Alay is Teal's fourth husband and one of her business partners. He spent the last several years as the president and CEO of a pharma tech company. Then he left and focused on Teal's operation. At breakfast, Teal is telling the community that Alay is afraid to be vulnerable at Philia. So they all do an exercise together and talk through the issues. One guy, Sergio, he says Alay doesn't spend enough time close to Teal. And Rayo, the former skateboarder, says he doesn't feel a connection with Alay.
I don't know. I don't think I felt fully connected. I felt like I was there to validate how you were feeling. But
Alay commits to being more involved. They decide to do a bonding activity later that night.
Oh, something I just got an idea. We could write love letters to each other and rotate.
4 months later, Teal announced that she and Alay were getting divorced. Apparently, this kind of group process happens all the time. Whenever someone in the commune is triggered or upset by something, everyone drops whatever they're doing to work through it. Gabby had told me that when they go through these sessions within the community, it becomes like an experiment for Teal to develop new processes. It's raining on the cabana as we're talking.
It usually comes from scenarios in the community where something happens and we're like, we need resolution. Somebody's not happy, somebody got left behind, or whatever circumstance. These things come up in families. I'm sure everyone can relate to that. But usually how it works in, I guess, regular families, it's that there's rupture but there's no repair. And things just happen and you kind of gloss over it and that's life. But what we do and what Teal does is take a proactive approach to fixing the rupture between the community members, between her and other people, external people, family members, and so on and so forth. So that's how these techniques are usually born.
And it's kind of like an incubator for new self-help therapies. And it's happening all the time. And it can take hours. It can take all day. And that seems beyond frustrating to me. I mean, waiting hours to eat, and then the food just sits there? And when you finally do eat, Teal instigates a group exercise? But I'm not in her intentional community. And everyone who is seems to be totally fine with this. They also seem fine with not making a salary, even though they're gardening, building a sweat lodge, and running a digital media company. Even though Teal told me she's turning a profit. Most of her intentional community are here as volunteers. They all believe in Teal's vision. It's obvious they respect her, or adore her. A few times I see some of Teal's female followers caressing her back and arms. Whenever I spoke with Teal one-on-one, I noticed people watching me. On the last day, I sat down for an extended interview with Teal. I saw some of her followers pressed against the windows, peering in. I couldn't help but wonder if they were jealous of the time I was getting with Teal. Or if they were being protective. Or some combination of the two. I spoke with a lot of these people. Like Rayo and Gabia and Lynn, who wanted to take me through the completion process when I was triggered. But I keep wondering about what and who they were leaving behind to be here. And about how much influence Teal really has over her followers.
So after that retreat, he told me he was leaving me. And the reason he was leaving me and our family was because he had a one-on-one with Teal Swan about how our vibration is not a good fit or a good match. And he left me and my two-year-old, and he followed her.
Next time on The Gateway, I look into how Teal's influence has spiraled out and gone beyond her control. If you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, you can speak with someone by confidentially contacting the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or the Crisis Text Line at 741-741. both provide free anonymous support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You've been listening to a Gizmodo podcast, hosted by me, Jennings Brown. The Gateway is produced by Jessica Glazer and Emily Pontecorvo at Fusion Media Group, and edited by Barry Finkel of Pineapple Street Media. Additional production help by Levi Sharp and Mitra Kaboli. Mondana Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Editorial oversight by Kelly Bourdais. Original score and mixing by Hannes Brown. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, Mario Aguilar, Marina Galperina, and Susie Banacarum. If you have any information you'd like to share about Teal Swan, please email us at thegateway@gizmodo.com or leave a message at 315-888-1654.